Hello, and welcome to the Wind Power Podcast. My name's Orlando Jenkinson, and I'm a reporter with Wind Power Monthly. As wind power's contribution to the global energy transition grows, insiders are looking to improve sustainable practices within the wind industry itself. In today's episode, we are joined by Lisa Ekstrand, the Head of Sustainability at Vestas, and Carbon River's Chief Technical Officer David Morgan, to discuss how both companies are boosting circular economics in the wind industry by developing new ways to recycle turbine blades. Lisa, I was wondering if you could briefly explain why recycling blades is such a key issue when we're talking about sustainability and circular economics in the wind industry.
If you look at the entire wind turbine today, actually the absolute big majority is already recyclable. So between 85 to 90%, depending on the wind turbine model. And that is, of course, also because in the tower structure, we use steel, and steel is a very attractive material to recycle. The remaining component that have up to date been difficult to recycle is the wind turbine blades. And that's because they are basically made out of composite materials, and the material fractions in the blades are glued together with a super glue and epoxy resin. And thereby, it's been very difficult to separate the materials and thereby get access to them and get them to enter into their own recycling value chain. I mean, there's nothing toxic or environmental toxic with end-of-life blades. But of course, as we grow as an industry, there will be a lot of wind turbine blades reaching the end of life. And of course, to apply a sustainable use of resources and keep materials in the loop, of course, this is something that we would like to find a solution to so that we can avoid landfilling or incineration of the wind turbine blades.
David, did you have anything to add at all? Maybe like what makes blade recycling so tricky?
Yeah, from our perspective, we started this project with the United States Department of Energy back in 2020. They gave us a grant to do proof of concept for circular economy for composites. This came out of the Wind Energy Technology Office that we have brilliantly worked with. And because of that context, the focus was on wind blades, of course. Specific to wind, we partnered with LM Wind, GE, and PacifiCorp for the first donation blades back in 2020. We figured out how to effectively and economically downsize those blades and then run them through what we call a multiple-stage novel glass fiber recovery system. We separate the lightning strike, of course, and then the root ring bolts. We call them hammers. And then after those are separated out, then we run it through a reactor. And we take that reactor up to a certain temperature threshold. The polymer cracks. We have light and heavy hydrocarbons off our process. Light hydrocarbons is a syngas, natural gas, that recirculates for net positive. The heavy hydrocarbons condenses into a renewable oil that comes off the same epoxy resin that Lisa just mentioned, that system. And then so we recover out of the organics, the oils off the composite. And then, of course, that goes to offtake partners for a variety of different fractionation monomer purposes, petrochemical, aviation, fuel. After we separate, break apart the polymer and the composites with the resins and organics and the glass fiber, then we strengthen the glass with resizing, because in our process, the sizing is removed. That goes into thermoplastics, or glass goes into thermoplastics, nonwovens, SMC, additive manufacturing, et cetera. We work a lot with the automotive, of course, with wind, building materials, glass fiber OEMs, marine vessels, et cetera. Carbon River's contribution to the industry is a genuine ESG circular economy. And gratefully, we've worked with the United States Department of Energy, Oak Ridge National Lab in particular, to demonstrate that our process is carbon negative. And so the DOE is publishing data on that very soon. So we're excited about that contribution to the industry as well.
Thank you very much for that. Pyrolysis, that's the technical term for the process you just described, right?
Yeah, we typically don't use the term pyrolysis because in the past, pyrolysis in the industry is known for like tire recovery, right, and things of this nature. It's a very different system from what we do. We modify a standard pyrolysis line for a petrochemical process to break apart the polymer with the composite. And so with that, traditional pyrolysis, say for tire, is a very high temperature. It's a challenging process. It's very high embodied energy. Ours is not. We do very low temperature, a steady state. Once the polymer is cracked, ours is net positive because of the recirculation, the capture of the syngas coming up off the light hydrocarbons. In that sense, yes, fundamentally, it is a type of pyrolysis system, but it's very, very different than a traditional pyrolysis system.
Lisa, as I understand it, Vestas has quite a different way to recycle wind turbine blades.
recently in February, the company unveiled the CTEC process that it's been using to recycle blades. Could you just explain a little bit about how that works, please?
We've been in a development project for a couple of years together with the Danish Technology Institute and Aarhus University, and also one of the world's largest epoxy resin suppliers, Olin Epoxy. We came together to see how we can actually find a solution to the blade recycling issue. And the discovery that we made was that we have actually found a way to very efficiently dissolve the epoxy resin that keeps the different material fractions together, and thereby getting access to the different materials so they could enter into its own recycling value chain. Because that has been the challenge in the past. The blades that are put up today and most of the blades that will be put up in the future, I mean, they are designed to last for very long, 25 plus years, even longer, and also in conditions that are quite harsh, ultimately a lot of wind. And the challenge that we had was to target exactly that. How do we find a way to separate the different material fractions when the blades have been designed exactly not to be separated? Our technology is currently under a patent review process, so we are not allowed to disclose too much information, but it's a liquid-based chemical solution that shows that the epoxy resin very efficiently dissolves, and thereby we get access to different materials and also the epoxy powder. What we're ultimately also looking to is to also focus a little bit more on the epoxy resin and convert the epoxy powder that comes out from the separation process and then make new virgin-grade epoxy resin that we eventually later on should be able to use when we make new wind turbine blades and thereby offer blades with recycled content. That technology is tested in a lab scale, and we see that that works very efficiently. But for us, it was also important to get some scale into this and industrialize it. And Vestas is not a recycling company. There are others that do that much better than us. That's why we eventually teamed up with a recycling company that's active in Europe, Stena Recycling. And now we're working in a pilot phase with them to do the first scaling up and try it out in a somewhat larger scale. And if that is successful in 2 years from now, there will then be a decision to really industrialize this so we can actually offer a real recycling route for our customers. And our customers are, of course, ultimately the wind farm owners.
Absolutely. Yeah. I definitely want to get onto questions of scalability with both of you in a moment. I was just hoping to follow up on that question of how much of the recycled materials that you do get out of this process that's currently being run through a lab at a smaller scale, how much of those materials could you use to make new wind turbine blades?
Right now, we are very much focusing on the separation process because that is for us what is key now. But what we then, as a second step, will be focusing on for now will be the epoxy resin. That is what we are looking at and use as a recycled content in when we make new wind turbine blades. And then, of course, the future will tell us if some of the other materials are able to do the same. But ultimately, what is important for circularity is not necessarily that all the materials are being reused in making new wind turbine blades, as long as they're entering into new applications, perhaps where they have a higher value, is, of course, perfectly fine.
So yeah, just moving on to scalability, I was wondering if each of you could discuss some of the challenges in scaling up these processes and how far along the road each of your organizations are in terms of making that happen.
At the end of this calendar year, Carbon Rivers will have recycled our first 1,000 blades. And so we're excited about that milestone. We work with all the OEMs, including Vestas, and blade manufacturers for various initiatives, as well as a lot of the developers. And so here in the U.S., as an example, we're doing multiple repowers, taking blades out of landfill, taking blades from graveyards where they've been sitting on the ground for years. And developers and OEMs are contracting us out to take those blades in, downsize them, recycle those blades, put them into next generation lifecycle materials. Of course, I've got negotiating offtake contracts with all the crude oil that comes off our line with various companies because it's a sulfur-free red diesel. So there's a lot of things that we do for recovery circular economy from the blade. So again, from our perspective, the blade is 100% recycled. All the composite, all the resin, everything goes into next life cycle recovery. We're currently in production part approval process with about a dozen different OEMs. Most of those are in automotive, but TPI Composites and LM Wind are also looking at this material for a variety of different blade applications for next life cycle. Nonwoven mats like a bleeder cloth or surface belt, things like that, or lays down really nicely in a matte form for blade manufacturing. But OEMs in the automotive space in particular need this material back immediately because, as you know, in Europe, that they have a 2030 deadline for having 25% of the recovered material in automotive. So those are the initiatives that we're working toward, our automotive partners, helping them with those milestones and those initiatives and making sure that they can meet those regulation requirements by 2030. Another point you mentioned, Orlando, not just with scalability, but the difficulty thereof. We have two different strategies. One is having regional facilities where we can take in 200 metric tons per day of material and recover that. Those are 55,000 metric ton per year facilities. Looking at have those built out in North America, UK, EU, starting next year. But we can also do regional, low, smaller modular sites. So as an example, we might have an automotive group or a glass fiber OEM that has a tremendous amount of post-industrial and then post-consumer from their customers. And we can have a small modular site basically on the back door of their manufacturing house to recover the material, provide them the crude oil, and they can do with it what they like. So we've come up with different, I'll say, installation strategies that fit the regional concerns that our customers have.
That definitely sounds like a very interesting option to have it literally on site and almost cut out any sort of logistical issues there. In terms of being a potentially carbon negative process, presumably the crude oil would have some impact on that.
Absolutely, it would. So we've done a LCA scope 1 and 2 on our process with Oak Ridge National Lab. And then they'll do our scope 3 next year when we have this material, the oil, the glass fiber intermediates. Once those go to different groups, automotive, wind, building material, marine, et cetera, then we'll do our scope 3 with Oak Ridge on that embodied energy and greenhouse gas. But right now for scope 2, we're carbon negative simply because the offsets of the byproducts that come off our line and the fact that once we kick it off with the natural house gas, we turn it off when the process starts because it recirculates the energy. And so that's quite a nice feature of our particular glass fiber recovery system. But the offsets with the glass and the oil and things like that provide for that carbon negative when compared to greenhouse gas and embodied energy.
Do you hope to remain carbon negative as you scale up to commercial scale?
We expect to. I imagine that extrapolation, the data right now we have in terms of the 20 ton and the 200 metric ton per day, those are throughput numbers lines, we could basically not only be off grid, but we can sell that surplus gas back to the grid.
Lisa, I was wondering if you ask you a very similar question in terms of the challenges regarding scaling up CTEC recycling process that Vestas are working on.
That's yet to be seen. We are in a pilot phase right now where we are trying in a somewhat larger scale. And as part of that feasibility study that we're running is also to see how the business case holds when we scale up. But that said, I mean, one of the success criteria that we had in the CTEC project was this technology or solution should be more or less on par with other alternative disposal routes available today. And yes, there are a lot of things coming, including what David has been talking to us. What is mostly used today is unfortunately landfill or incineration and also cement co-processing. And our ambition has always from the start to make sure that this is as competitive with these major alternative disposal routes. So the chemicals being used here, I mean, there's nothing exotic by them. It's off-the-shelf chemicals. So, of course, there is a lot of reasons for us to see that there will be a good business case that also holds when we scale up. But I mean, nothing is confirmed until we have fully concluded on the feasibility study. But it has been a consideration already from the beginning.
Is there any pressure felt from, for example, some of the larger Chinese OEMs and manufacturers that are also talking about blade recyclability?
I think everyone is looking at blade recycling today. And I think, and that is ultimately a really, really good thing. This is an industry challenge that we need to solve. So I think to see the increased focus on this is really, really good. No doubt there will be different solutions coming out, but the key is, of course, to make it as competitive as possible and as scalable as possible. And I think there may be solutions now for those blades that will be taken down now. For those blades taken down in 25 to 30 years, who knows what we will have then. But there is a big focus, and that's exactly how it should be.
And in terms of working with the state and with governments where both of your companies operate, I'm just curious as to what role you think federal or even state authorities should play in helping promote sustainability like this, like blade recycling and circular economics in the wind industry.
I think it's something that should really be valued in renewable energy auctions. Of course, what is being looked at today is cost, but I think there's also some more value-driven criteria that should be included to also really promote that the industry is focusing more and more on this topic, making sure that recyclability is actually something that giving a real value in auctions for renewable energy or wind energy.
David, did you have anything to add at all on that point?
It's really interesting from my perspective. I do a lot of government relation and policy work with Carbon Rivers. And when I say something like this, this is a GE-37 wind blade. We recovered the glass from a GE-37. And then we worked with a group here in Tennessee called Green Llama. They have multi-purpose cleaners on the grocery stores at a Whole Foods here in the States. And we took polypropylene pellets with the glass fiber recovered from a wind blade and did an injection molding sprayer head that's on the shelf in grocery stores. So this is a commercial product from Next Life Cycle Blades. When I show that to someone in Congress or a lieutenant governor, some official, they immediately start to say, then if composites have been demonstrated to be recovered and go into Next Life Cycle, there's no reason to ever landfill. So we will work to have legislation state by state throughout the U.S. to prohibit landfill of composites, which is great. That needs to be done anyway. And Carbon Rivers provides one solution of others that can provide end-of-life solutions to this material. I mean, you can see clean, mechanically intact glass. This, again, is coming from a wind blade, and these are thermoplastic pellets. We sell those to companies, and here's a non-woven mat that would be an excellent bleeder cloth for going into a new blade. So again, we're commercial and we have offtake agreements for the glass, for the oil. And it's basically having this material. It's new, but it's not new. Everyone knows what fiberglass is, but this is recovered fiberglass. And so as it's being validated as a product for a new blade, a new car, a new boat, a new building material, composite decking, whatever it may be, it has to go through the natural process, of course. But we do all the heavy lifting to make sure that when a company like a Toyota or like a TPI says, we want this spec glass, this tensile strength, this GSM, et cetera. We do that on our end, we send it to them, and they go through the validation process.
Lisa, we know that some countries, for example, Germany, and I think the Netherlands as well, have bans on, I think, turbine blades going in landfill. Is that something you'd like to see spread more generally?
It's the two sides of the coin, right? So one is actually to make sure that recyclability is something that is valued in auctions. And then at the other side of the coin, you have, of course, ban on landfills and so on. And in Europe, there is a voluntary industry ban to stop landfilling wind turbine blades by 2025. So that's already in place. And then we also see individual markets going quite fast forward in introducing quite specific recycling requirements, France being one of them, where there is the requirement that the big majority of new wind turbine blades should be more or less fully recyclable going forward.
Both the carrot and stick approach, you might say. I just wanted to discuss optimization of the materials as well. Could you just sort of briefly describe how difficult that is to make sure that the materials you're getting from the recycling process can be reused in an optimized way, and how can that meet the challenges of materials that are freshly made, for example?
For wind turbine blades, we have extremely high requirements on the materials going in. We have very, very rigid specifications. So basically, the properties of the recovered or recycled materials that we will use into new wind turbine blades needs to be the same as for new materials. That is the requirements that we have.
For example, like potentially using the recycled materials to make new turbine blades, is that something that you could actually see happening in the future? Could they ever reach that same level, that high benchmark that you guys set?
That's still to be seen. David says that the fibers that they are recycling can actually be used into new wind turbine blades. That's to be seen. And of course, that is would definitely be interesting. But again, I don't see it as a necessity. As long as there is a recycling value chain that could be outside of the wind industry, that's also perfectly fine. That is not what is critical for circularity, that is being reused into the same product necessarily, as long as there is a use case with that might even have a higher value than reusing it into new wind turbine blades.
David, did you have anything to add on that point of optimization at all?
Yes, I agree with Lisa entirely that as long as there are offtake circular agreements in place and opportunities for this material, that's the most important thing. Wherever they go, they need to be high value, next generation life cycle use. So as one example, this is an SMC, sheet molding compound. We took Volkswagen lift gates, Atlas lift gates, recovered the glass fiber from those lift gates, and then worked with some of our automotive tier supplier groups that we partner with, and got the glass back to them in the form factor and the proper GSM and tensile mechanical properties they wanted. And then they made coupons for sheet molding compound, SMC, to go back into basically recycled SMC to go for automotive. So as an example, the optimization side of things is something we will always be looking toward, dialing and sharpening more and more, as any industry needs to do. The offtake is dictated by the intake for us. So if we have a customer that says we want thermoplastic pellets and they need to be this tensile, this mechanical property, et cetera, this fiber length, then we have to source our feedstock based upon those product validation requirements. So some of the materials, they can't go through, say, tremendous fatigue. That might be something like a cup holder in a vehicle for a pellet or something like that. But if it's going to be something that's structural, we have to source feedstock that is ideal for those glass properties that we're asked to require. We can, of course, strengthen the glass by resizing in-house and do that ourselves. And we have other proprietary ways to get the glass up to virgin mechanical property standards, not a problem. In that sense, the offtake is dictated by the intake. If we need, say, 3 or 4 millimeter fiber to go into a product line, then we have to downsize properly through screens and things like this in our processes by having the fiber length accordingly so it can be processed in our recovery system and then go into thermoplastic pellets as an example. That optimization side of things to me is very, very fascinating, especially being a non-engineer, more on the business strategy side. But I love working with our engineers because we can figure out those problems and make sure that our offtake customers get exactly what they need for mechanical properties.
It's definitely one that, yeah, I could probably talk a lot more on, but I don't want to take any more of your guys' time today. I just wondered whether you had anything that you'd like to say that I haven't brought up yet.
From my perspective, real quick, thank you for the opportunity. Carbon Rivers will be in Europe next year in the UK. And so we're excited about having a presence there and providing really a global scale up for this and our contribution to the circular economy composite process.
Thank you very much. We will have a very intensive next year when we will running our first pilots. We very much look forward to that and share more as we move along on that track.
Great. Definitely looking forward to reporting on that too. Well, thank you very much both for joining us.
Thanks.
Thank you both. Have a good day.
Thanks for listening to the Wind Power Podcast. We'll be back soon with another episode to explore the issues which are driving the wind industry. In the meantime, for the latest news, expert opinion and analysis, visit windpowermonthly.com for daily updates or to sign up for one of our specialist bulletins delivered straight to your inbox.